WFM with Green Farm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Thank you to the fantastic Tara Stewart. Back with the best tunes tomorrow at 3. It's Tuesday the 27th of October and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we have Barry Geraghty as his autobiography hits the shelves.
Mayo's Killian O'Connor on making this season count ahead of his championship opener.
Plus, we've Stephen Kelly in studio ahead of tonight's Champions League action.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM. Thunica Munster managed to win the match last night. They didn't. They hammered Cardiff Blues, if truth be told.
It was fantastic, Ruby. It gave me a real lift. I know it was a bit of a bank holiday, but there's something about Monday Night Rugby that I like an awful lot. And I think, you know, when you think of rugby, you think tradition, Saturday, 3 o'clock. I think we got to compete now with other sports. Things are getting really busy. And I think rugby could sit in a lovely spot on Monday nights. And the reason I'm saying that is because it was such a good game. It was incredible, to be fair.
And then the next thing we'll have is, I played on Monday, but my turnaround is not till Friday, so I haven't got as many days to get over it as the lad that played the previous Friday. So, hey, it's great in theory, Donica, but when the reality of it kicks in and lads start crying about having to play twice in a week.
No, they won't. Well, lads...
They will.
You moan anyway. Once you, like, actually, that's a professional. You just whinge and moan, but there was
when
some,
you go pro.
Yeah, exactly. There was some incredible performances last night. You know, if you look at it, there's, and we've chatted about an awful lot of the players coming through, the likes
once,
of Gavin.
Once or twice, Dunica, you
twice.
Might have mentioned the young players and wanting to see them play.
Yeah,
you've got
absolutely.
Your wish now.
Yeah, well, and look, I was delighted last night. Gavin Coombs had a fantastic game, John Hognett, Jack O'Donoghue, then one of the established players. You know, within the environment, having a massive game and coming out with man of the match. And look, I'll be honest, I've watched an awful lot of rugby at the moment, and I don't think you'll see a better try than JJ Hanrahan's.
Not a young lad making a name for himself.
Yeah, exactly. But look, I think the finish of it was brilliant, and Cardiff are good. You know, they're a quality side. Munster would be disappointed. They scored off what you'd call launch every time, and that's small little things that you can work out in your defence, but you're disappointed when it happens because it shows that you're not ready for the initial attack. So there's plenty of learning, but I loved what Munster are about, and Billy Holland mentioned it at the start of the game, 14 Munster men going out there, and I think you saw that in the performance. I think they were buzzed up, and it was great. I do have a fear though, Ruby and Marie. I do think, you know, the Irish provinces are flying against, and if you look at all our provinces, had great wins this weekend, but I wonder about the standard of the competition. I really do. And you know, everyone's
you
on about,
the first person to wonder about that now.
Yeah, and look, I think hopefully the South Africans coming in can help beef it up and make it a proper league. But I just know from being over in England, they don't respect the Pro 14. Well, with 12 teams in it at the moment, even that is enough said. But yeah, it was a fantastic result. It was great.
Josh Witcherly, Finian's brother?
Yes, Finian's brother. I think that, and then in typical West Cork fashion, they're actually related to the Coombs in some way. And Gavin was playing, and Liam's a winger, so... There's a conveyor belt coming through from West Cork, and you're right, there's something in the water down there, but there's also a brilliant coach, Eugene McCarthy, who has done incredible work at underage level. And Marie and Ruby, we'd say it all the time, you can go on about the coaching they're getting now with Steve Larkham and Graham Rowntree and Johan van Grand, but it's the volunteers, it's the people that are helping them as 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds to learn and appreciate the game that probably deserve the respect. And look, there's a big wave coming because we haven't even seen Jack Crowley yet, or Jack O'Sullivan, who's incredible.
Well, Donica, last week was the Barbarians breaking COVID-19 regulations or whatever the protocols are. Looks like it was Dungarvan this week, Marie, and they're going to be ripped off their Waterford IFC Cup for not feeling a player who was waiting for a COVID test. That's unfortunate for Dungarvan, but that's just the way it goes. They are, the regulations and the rules were in. But earlier today, we also had Stephen Bradley. Marie, I think, did we?
We did, yeah. There's a lot of soccer going on today. I went out and spoke to Stephen Bradley, the Shamrock Rovers league-winning coach. Now, they won over the weekend because Bowes lost to Finn Harps. They're supposed to play Derry City tomorrow. We're not fully sure if that's going to go ahead. Derry City did put out a statement last night on their website and said that it isn't going ahead. We haven't got any official confirmation yet from the league that it is being postponed, but we're kind of waiting and watching. So when I did go to speak to Stephen Bradley, he wasn't sure yet, but one thing he was definitely sure of was that he is very happy about being a league winning manager.
Game on, football.
Yeah, I think people talk about what I've come through a lot, but you have to understand that this is Shamrock Rovers, and this club expects to win things. We knew when we came in we had a job on our hands to get us back here, and we knew it was going to be difficult, but when I went in I fully understood that there's going to be pressures and you're going to hear things that you don't like, but that's part of the job and you have to accept that.
So when things go your way, then do you hear things that you do like?
Yeah, well, you have to take them with a pinch of salt, because now you have to be careful. It is nice. I like when obviously the club get the credit they deserve and the players, because they're the ones that have done the work. The staff that I have allow me to stand on the sideline on Friday night and enjoy the football we play. So I have the easy job of picking the team, really.
And the players themselves, they, you know, it's been a really difficult time for everybody, but I suppose just the situation that we're in and you know, Shamrock Rovers were hit with COVID as well. So for them to come through this and have something nice at the end of it, and to, because for a while you must have thought, are we going to get there?
Yeah, we did. Well, like I said, the players have been excellent. They've done their work. Came back after the lockdown and really focused when we knew that it was a shortened campaign. It gave us very little margin for error, so we knew that we had to be really ready to attack every game and not give up too many points. And the players have took that on board and gone and attacked every game, and they've been excellent. So they fully deserve it.
We're getting used to stories now of COVID being in professional teams. It's reality now. But like for you guys, when it did come into the camp, what was that like?
It was worrying, to be fair, because you're not quite sure the effects that's going to have on the players that were affected. We've had one or two of the players that it's hit really hard, and that's been difficult for them and their families. So look, you're facing something that we've never faced before. So it's probably the fear of the unknown. But thankfully they've all come through it and they're ready to go again. But when it first hits it, there is a lot of fear there.
For Jack Byrne in particular, there was a huge amount of sympathy because of it coinciding with him being in the Ireland squad. So potentially he missed out on an opportunity to represent his country, which must have been hard.
Yeah, it obviously was. And Jack's one of the players that got hit really hard with. You know, he really struggled. And we're trying to get him back now. We're trying to get him back going again. But I think Jack now has good people around him, good family around him, and they helped him through.
How's he doing?
He's still struggling a bit at the moment. Like I said, Jack was hit really hard. He's one of the players that really got hit with it badly. So he's still struggling a bit, but he's getting there.
And everybody else?
The rest are okay. We had to ease them back in at different times, because obviously they got tested at different times. Some were positive, some were negative. But like I said, Jack's probably the worst out of the group.
It's almost hard sometimes to not think about the fixtures before the players, but the reality is that they're the most important, and likewise that game against Derry that potentially might not happen tomorrow evening, the safety of players has to come first, I'd imagine, Stephen.
Yeah, I think I fully understand where Derry are this morning or last night when they got the news. Because once it's in the group, you're trying to think the close contacts, what we did, you're trying to retrace everything so you can give the HSE a clear guideline of what happened. And look, whatever the outcome is of this, whether we play the game or not, we just hope that everyone's okay and Derry's players and staff.
Yeah, well, I think that we would echo the sentiments of Stephen Bradley there. Now, the Airtricity League First Division takes centre stage this evening with final round games taking place. Seven teams still in the hunt for promotion. The champions will be promoted with the next four teams qualifying for a playoff. If league leaders Drogheda beat Cabinteely, they'll win the title. And should they slip up and Bray get the better of Athlone Town, then the Seagulls take the spoils. So it's a pretty, pretty complicated one for us. But John Kenny is at Cabinteely and Drogheda United, and he will keep us up to date with what is happening there. John?
Yeah, I'm sitting in the car park waiting to go into the ground. As you say, Drogheda will win the First Division title this evening at Stradbrook should they equal or better Bray Wanderers' result. Now, they're away to Athlone Town, but here, United clear favourites to win against Cabinteely, having put five goals past them in three previous encounters, including putting five past them earlier this season. That's the reason, I suppose, they're top. Now, Bray can only hope to win in Athlone and hope that Drogheda slip up by either losing or indeed drawing to give them an automatic place in next season's Premier Division. As you say, a lot to play for tonight. Behind the top two, the scramble for the playoff places. Third place UCD go to sixth place Galway. They're 3 points ahead of John Caulfield's side, who before tonight are outside the fifth place that they need, so they have to win. Fourth place Longford, they're at bottom side Wexford. Longford are level on points with UCD, while Cabinteely host tonight Drogheda. They're on fifth place, 2 points ahead of both Galway and Cove, and they're at home to Shamrock Rovers too. Thus, every single game has something at stake for at least one side tonight, and everything to play for in every single match tonight. So there's going to be abacuses and computers and calculators at the ready tonight for all of those games, which are all kicking off simultaneously at 7:45. It could be a hell of an evening.
Thanks, John Kenny. Enjoy it. It does sound like it will be a whole lot of fun. Now, we don't need our calculators for the Ireland women's hopes for the Euro qualification. We were hoping that Greece might cause a bit of an upset against Ukraine, but unfortunately they haven't. Ukraine won 4-0 away in Greece. A win for Greece would have guaranteed Virapau's side second in the group and a spot in the playoffs, but we look, that was unlikely anyway, and it will come down to that huge game against Germany, so worth keeping an eye on that over the next few weeks. Now, there is Champions League action tonight. Jesus, good and busy. Stephen Kelly is with us in studio, and Liverpool are playing Midtjylland. I know we spoke a little bit about Liverpool's form last night, but I think when you think of a game like Midtjylland, you would think they're just going to go into it and, you know, might make a few changes, but I always think of Red Star Belgrade in 2018, and you think, you know, you cannot take these kind of teams for granted, Stephen.
No, you can't, and I think, you know, everybody thinks this is a formality, turn up, win the game, move on to the next one, but, you know, these teams can pose some issues at times. You know, Liverpool should be more than comfortable and have a squad that's got enough depth about them to absolutely cope with it, but you just never know. They've earned the right to be in this competition. You know, you look at Dundalk, they're in the group stages of Europa League. You don't write these teams off. You have to give them an opportunity because they've worked hard to get there, and you kind of think that, you know, they don't take their eye off the ball, Liverpool, but you feel it's going to be a win.
Well, Ruby, Manchester United did find out all about them when they lost in the Europa League in 2015-2016.
Unfair blow.
I was going to ask, was that the same Midtjylland? But obviously it is. They're the Danish team, isn't it?
Same
beat Brøndby last week and got hammered by Atalanta in the Champions League last week. So I'd say Liverpool would be fairly all right, Marie.
They'll be all right, yeah. It should be. Look, it is a big night, I think. Just even from the defence, we spoke a little bit about it before, and I don't think we actually got to mention how important Alisson is. And even just hear him speaking today, you know, just listening to how confident he is and having someone like him back. It's okay. Look, he doesn't replace the Virgil van Dijk factor, but he's still a huge presence.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, everybody spoke about Van Dijk and how much an influence has in the team, but equally as much Alisson was that as well. The clean sheet records that he's got since he's been there, you know, having a spine of your team that you can rely on and a goalkeeper that you feel extremely comfortable playing in front of, whether it be with the ball at his feet, coming out for catches, making saves when he needs to be made. At times in games, you know, Liverpool be a tie and he will come up with an amazing save for them. So having him back between the sticks is hugely important for him, especially that Van Dijk is going to be out.
Are we looking at a 4-2-3-1 formation, do you think?
I think they have to be. I can't see them changing what they've been doing. I think Klopp works so hard on his team off the pitch that they all will fit into the formation that he wants to play based on how they do in training. And, you know, it's worked so well for him up to this point. I can't see him going away from that. You know, obviously horses for courses, sometimes you have to change it. But for me, it's going to be, he's going to stick to what he knows.
Looking at that stat earlier, Stephen, Midtjylland have allowed 32 shots on goal in the last two games. That's really going to suit Liverpool, who like to attack. They have no trouble scoring. Liverpool is defending is their issue, but they could get 6 or 7 tonight.
Oh yeah, with the front three, if the lads play up front, the likes of Salah, Mane, Firmino, and then you throw Jota into that, who has been excellent since he's been there, 2 goals, they've got an abundance of attacking options who know how to put the ball in the back of the net. So like I said, you think it's going to be formality. These teams can cause problems, but defensively, you know, the 4 goals they scored, a couple of them are really good for Midtjylland, the last game they played to qualify for the group stages. So, you know, there's going to have a couple of opportunities, but you feel Liverpool should really, really come out quite comfortable in this.
Stephen, history matters though. Like Midtjylland, they're only together. The two clubs came together 21 years ago and they've been kind of set up off the back of that Moneyball concept of, you know, getting the right players in the right positions. Do you think they have anything to threaten Liverpool?
I've watched a couple of clips, I've seen them play, and I've seen the couple of goals they scored in the last game were quite well taken, good finish for them. But like I said, they do operate off that Moneyball system, which is based around statistics. They bring in players that guaranteed him a certain amount of goals, certain amount of games, certain amount of turnovers. And, you know, I think for me, football is just too many variations in it for that actually to work to the highest level, I think.
Liverpool do a little bit of that as well, though.
They do. And I think now players are recruited based on statistically. I think it does. Brentford, they're the ones that do in the English League, and you know they've been so unlucky not to be promoted to the Premier League. Boy players of a certain age, and I think it definitely does help, and it can give you a really good platform to build on. But I think when it comes to football, I do think there's a lot of variations.
I'd imagine now with the advances in technology, there's people just sitting in rooms for 24 hours a day watching clips of players, looking at statistics and then trying to see if they can fit into squads or at least be someone that they can make money out of in the future.
Well, it's making money, isn't it? So they're bringing, like I said, Brentford do it really well. They bring in so many players of a young age. They tick every box when it comes to whether it be physical strength, pace, ability, not getting injured, and then they think that they can improve them, and then it's an asset to the club. They can sell them on. If they don't do well enough for them to get promoted, there's someone they can move on.
In your day, was there anything like that?
Not so much. You would always be checked upon. Like, your injury record was always a huge thing. In many games you played a season before, had you been capable of playing enough games every season that will suit the team you're going to? Not to the extent now. Just everything is documented now. You can't. Nothing a player does is not brought back to them.
Thank God injury wasn't taken into my career. I'd have been on a scrap heap.
But your recovery would have been really good. So, I mean, that would have counted for something.
Yeah, it would have been a handball. What about just pure raw talent? Does that not just count for anything anymore?
It does, stats and value. Yeah, it does. And, you know, you kind of think, you look at someone like Jack Grealish, who, pure raw talent. That's he's like the enigma. He's the one that goes against the grain. But again, people want players that are guaranteed to do a certain amount for them every week, and that's it. That's what the teams are looking for now.
How would your stats have measured up, do you think?
Injury wise, I was pretty good until towards the last days of my career, when I was 33, 34, when I ruptured my Achilles. But before that, I went 7 years without missing an international game.
All right.
Wow.
So you were able to perform on all fronts.
I played a full
7 months at once. I think I played every minute of every game in the Premiership one season, was the only outfield player to do it as well. So
speaking of injuries, Pep Guardiola seems to be in a bit of bother. He doesn't really have an out-and-out striker. So who is going to get the goals for him?
He plucks it as they can pass the ball.
Yeah, no, it's an issue. And you kind of feel that it's been going that way for a while. Aguero is getting to a stage in his career where, you know, he's not guaranteed to give them the games, statistically speaking. You know, we're looking at the money ball, but he can't guarantee him every week because he the level of energy he outputs, he's going to get injured. Jesus has not been able to do it as well, and they don't have someone who's a natural centre forward from where all their play, all the intricate football, the amount of times they keep the ball, they need someone to stick in the back of net. Sterling has been their kind of go-to guy, but you feel they're screaming out for centre forward, and he's come out saying they couldn't afford to buy one, which is just
considering they're in the market for Messi.
Yeah, you kind of think that, you know, come on.
When you're moving Sterling around like that, look, he's played all of their games this season, but when you're moving him around like that and trying to get him to play a position just to suit your system, is that compromising his game?
Yeah, because Guardiola's worked so hard with him to almost perfect that off the left position where he comes in, he's late arriving into the box, he has tap-ins. That suits him. That really suits his style. He's direct, he runs at people, and you know, by moving him out of position, then you're compromising his style of play and what you've worked so hard to get him up to become one of the best players in the world by playing in that system. And now you're changing it because you don't have someone to suit what you want to do.
Stephen, when you do move him out of position as well, the squad, how do they react? If you're in that, you know, that squad and you see one of the players being, I know he's a talent, but you'd fancy yourself for a start there and he's been moved around.
Yeah, so if you have a player that is being changed out of their natural position to play a position you play, is that what you're getting at? Like, so if you're it's frustrating. If you're a right back and you know a centre back or midfielder is going to be putting your position ahead of you, you're not going to game. That can cause a bit of unrest in the squad and someone who plays up front. But at the moment, there's no real established centre forward there that's going to be put off by that, I don't think.
We've been lauding Pep for so many years about what he's able to do with a team, but when you think about what happened last season with these issues at the back and now we've got issues up front, is there question marks over him kind of as an overseer of the whole setup?
There are question marks, and I suppose when you look to him at Barcelona and him at Bayern Munich, he inherited extremely great teams. You know, you're talking of Barcelona, he had arguably the two best midfielders in the world for 10 years almost, in Xavi and Iniesta, and then you throw Messi on top of that, who is arguably the best player ever to kick a football. And then you go to Bayern, who were just, when he went there, they just won the Champions League. They had players like Robin, Ribery, Lam, who was just exceptionally, he played anywhere for them. So, you know, he's always gone to clubs that had a lot of players there that you could go in and build a team around. Same was kind of at City, even though he brought a lot of players and he spent 250 million on defenders. You know, he did things when he first came in that blew us away, the style of football, how high the press was. But people have learned from that, and people like Klopp have come in and been able to show it. They can do that, but in a different style, a different way. And when they signed Van Dijk, that just changed everything. That absolutely changed every perspective on how one player can change a team, and the likes of Alisson as well.
There are two games underway at the moment. Lokomotiv Moscow are trailing Bayern Munich 1-0, and Shakhtar Donetsk and Inter Milan is scoreless, both after 25 minutes. So if you think of Aguero, and he's not going to be there, and De Bruyne then coming back, who would you think is more important to that Man City team?
Gotcha. Yeah, it is going to be. Yeah, no, I think De Bruyne last season, you look at De Bruyne last season and he had 20 assists and they still didn't come anywhere near Liverpool. You had Aguero the season before and he scored how many goals and they finished top of the league. There's your answer, really, isn't it?
So that's who you'd, that's who you'd pick. Yeah.
It's about goals.
Yeah.
Goals win games, Ruby. Yeah, but you still need someone to set them up.
Yeah, you do. But I think De Bruyne individually sets up so many goals, and he is an unbelievable talent. He was the best player in the league last year.
I take Van Dijk over the whole lot of them. That's all I'm saying.
Surprise. Stephen, there are a pile of other games on the Champions League tonight. And just a quick wrap before we let you go. But Paul O'Connell's team are playing. Borussia Mönchengladbach are playing Real Madrid. Surely Madrid. Will Madrid manage to beat them?
Yeah,
maybe.
I think Madrid in European competitions, This is their competition. The last few seasons not been as great, but with the fact that they win the league last year and Zidane back at the helm, you kind of think they always have a chance. Their squad is aging a little bit. They're not, you know, when they lost Ronaldo, there was a big blow to them. Bale, who hasn't been performing for them, is at Spurs now. You know, they've got some really good players, and someone like Ramos, who's the captain, but for me, they're not the same they were when they went on the 3 in a row. I don't think they can achieve that again, but you can't ever go against them in this competition.
Atletico Madrid are playing Salzburg, the other side of Madrid. They're at home. I'd fancy them myself now.
Yeah. Atletico are just, they're such a hard team to beat. They're unbelievable for getting so far in this competition without actually ever winning. They cause teams so many problems. They're hard to break down. They're so well organised. Simeone just has them playing such a difficult style of football. And, you know, you absolutely fancy them to come in at group stages again and get really far in this competition. But do they just have enough to actually finally get over the line in comparison to their teams that are around? I just don't think so.
And the other group, the other game, even in Liverpool's group, Atalanta and Ajax. Atalanta were good winners last week or two weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think last season as well, Atalanta, you know, turned a few heads. Good side, play attractive football, cause teams problems, cause goals. Ajax are not what they were when they were a few seasons ago. They've lost a lot of big influential players, De Ligt, Van de Beek, you know, they've all gone on to big clubs, but they're still a fantastic side, doing extremely well in the Dutch league. But I just don't think they're going to be, I think Atalanta for me are going to be pip that one.
Well, they are an exciting team. Stephen Kelly, thanks so much. Enjoy the game. We'll be keeping an eye on it, no doubt, as well as the first division, of course. We're going to take a quick break and then we're back with Killian O'Connor.
With Green Firm, healthy snacking made easy. With Green Firm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide. Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now let's turn our attention to Gaelic games, and Mayo's Killian O'Connor joins us. Killian, almost a decade since you started playing intercounty football. A very different championship awaits. How are you feeling about it?
I'm excited. Doesn't feel like a decade either since I started, but excited by it. The uncertainty there over the last few months probably just, you know, increased your appetite again for it and your appreciation for it all. So everyone's chomping to get started now.
I imagine so. But the thing about it is, though, Killian, after this weekend, there's going to be a huge amount of teams gone because it's knockout football. Are you relishing that or a bit apprehensive?
I think relishing it. Like that white is a championship. It's what you train for. It's, you know, it's what you grew up watching, really, for me anyway, in the 90s. That's what it was. And there's something special about it, and that edginess on Cameron is what gets you going, and I'm getting butterflies and adrenaline even now thinking about it. So no, I think it's exciting.
Killian, then you throw in all the added differences that there will be this year. Obviously, a winter championship, the wind, the rain, different pitches, under lights, etc., etc. And there's so many nuances to it this year that it wasn't before. That must nearly make it more exciting, a change.
It does. Yeah, it does. There's all those factors you mentioned there that have to come into play now. And I think whatever teams do well will be the ones that adapt to the new surroundings. You know, underfoot conditions, the weather, you know, the level of risk that you take when you're on the ball or in possession, and how you use your restarts and things like that. You know, you're going to have to be really smart on all of those fronts to have any chance of success. So just looking forward to adapting to those things and just seeing how we go.
Killian, Marie mentioned it there, you're on the go for a decade. How's the body coping? We know you missed out in the game against Tyrone, but Bangs and Knox, how are you feeling ahead of this weekend?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I had a bit of a bang after the Galway game. I was hoping to play the second league game there and just didn't make it in time, really. I suppose there was still a bit of a knock in the leg, and then probably the small enough chance of aggravating it was enough really for the physios and medical team to rule me out. So that was frustrating. Wouldn't be the greatest spectator, but you know, if it means that it increases your chances of playing this weekend and playing well, then you go with it. So from that, I'm feeling good. I think everybody is well rested after the summer and had a club campaign under the belt as well, so no, thank God, I have very little to complain about on that front.
And Killian, what about the mental side of it? Because you're going to have to be peaking every week pretty much and then refocusing and getting back up again for the game. And if you just look at Mayo against Galway, completely dismantling them, and then last weekend probably didn't go as planned, how difficult is it going to be to get that balance right?
Yeah, I think you've said it there, like it's probably about not planning too far ahead. I know everybody always says that, but you know, COVID has probably forced our hand that way, that you didn't know if there was going to be a championship for a long time. You didn't know if you were going to come home to the news that it was pulled. So you had to just focus on, right, we're training tonight, 7 to 8, let's nail that. And I think that's kind of followed through now with the group. We're just thinking, it's the old cliche, but let's train really, really well tonight for whatever length we go. And you know, we know we're playing Leitrim tomorrow, so that's all we know for sure. Literally just attack that game as best we can, try and execute the plan. And like you said it there, if you start looking over the brow of the hill and start, you know, speculating as to who you might meet or whatever, you're just going to get caught and you won't have the performance you need. So it's just short-term planning. That's what we're trying to do, and, you know, max out our own performance, and whatever will happen after that, then you know,
it
will happen.
Killian, it's obviously going to be about recovery now as much as preparation in this championship. You obviously can't get fit from tonight, so you obviously are where you are. Are you happy with how your prep has gone? Are you happy you have enough groundwork in? Because a winter game is going to be hard on the legs.
Yeah, it is going to be tough. It's going to be on the bodies, but I suppose that's probably why the management and backroom would have given minutes to newer players in the league, both the two recent games, but also back into the spring. You know, there was 5 or 6 under-21s starting and coming on in those early spring league games, so they got plenty of exposure to Division 1 football against the top teams. And you know, I think whatever teams do well are going to need to utilise the full squad. You know, I don't think the same 15 will be starting for teams week by week, and even the extended panel of 26 will be changing. You know, if you get a dead leg or a tweak in the hammer, that's you gone. You know, you're out of the 15, you're out of the 26. So I think squad depth is going to be really important on that one, really.
And Killian, even if you look at last weekend's game against Tyrone, only 6 of the starters were in the All-Ireland semi-final against Dublin, and potentially or possibly none of them were in the same position. So it does feel like there's a change in the squad.
Oh, there definitely is. There definitely has been an influx of new players. I mentioned the experience they got back in the spring, but since then, since we've restarted, you know, it doesn't feel like they're being given game time for the sake of their experience. They're there on merit now. You know, they're coming on because they are deserving to come on, and if they're starting, it's because they're deemed, you know, the top guy in their position. So that brings with it great energy and probably that bit of innocence. But it also lights a fire under the older lads to say, well, hang on a second, I want to push back for my place here. So I think that level of competition is important in high-performing teams, and hopefully it'll push us on.
Killian, we focus on the negative side of COVID so much, but have the restrictions left you have more time with each other, you know, taking out things like travel for guys to, you know, to kind of get from work to training?
Yeah, we definitely have had more time we've noticed, like, just to have these kind of informal conversations between players, you know, the cup of coffee or the little chat before training when you're stretching that you mightn't have had time to do before. So there's been definitely work put into understanding the guys on your line or in your position, their habits, the way they play, the way they like to receive the ball. I'd say it's hard to quantify those kind of things, but I think those informal conversations are important, and I think this has given us the time to do that, and hopefully increase our understanding of each other, and that like things will reflect on the game.
Killian, what motivates you? You're somebody going in to the championship, the top scorer in the championship. You've only ever failed to score once in 55 appearances and you're black carded that day. What's your motivation now?
Motivation, that's, for me, like, it's about just performing and delivering for my teammates. I get most of my energy from the lads in the group, to be honest. That sense of satisfaction when you've prepared your body and your mind to perform on game day and do a job designated to you, you know, for your team. That's what I get the biggest buzz off, is just being there for the lads when they need you on game day. And I think it's no different now. If anything, the last few months away from the setup has probably allowed me to realise how important it is and how much I crave that group dynamic and that sense of camaraderie in the group. So I probably have a deeper appreciation for it now, and that's what motivates me. I love it, and you know, you don't get to do it forever, so for as long as I can pull on the jersey and go at it for Mayo, then I'm privileged.
Keenan, like, I think that was the answer maybe a Dublin footballer might have given us after winning 5 All-Irelands, but surely as a Mayo man still chasing Sam, surely the All-Ireland is your motivation.
Well, I mean, that's the reward at the end of the competition, you know, for whoever performs the best. So of course, that's up there for all teams to go and chase. But you know, we don't. You know, you're not probably going to believe me, but we don't really spend lots of time thinking about that, because you go and get flattened in training tonight if you're daydreaming about the All Ireland. So we kind of just. We know our standards, we know what we're supposed to be doing, we know what others in the group that we demand of each other. And I suppose it's the back of your head, you know, if you do those small things every single session, every minute of every session, you know, you'll be thereabouts, and you know, you give yourself an opportunity to go with the big one.
I fully understand what you're saying. I can understand that. I can't be thinking about winning Gold Cups, or could have been thinking about winning Gold Cups heading around the Gallop and William Mullins on a Tuesday morning, but it was still the success and the big days are what drove me to get me out and do it. And collectively as a group in Mayo, surely with how the league has gone, that dream of winning an All-Ireland must drive you all as a group.
No, there's no doubt about it. It certainly does. I think when you get together at the start of the year, we outline our goals and where we envisage the team going. But after that, we try and break it down into small weekly things or monthly things. You know, I think, look, every team is different, every individual is different, but I think if we spent our time talking, thinking, dreaming about trophies this and cup that and Sam this, we'd lose sight of what we have to do on a weekly basis to keep improving. So genuinely, if we keep getting better session on session, week on week, and we can win Sunday, and then set our sights on the next win. You know, that's good, and that's what we'd hope, that ultimately you'd get what you want then.
You can control your thoughts and put that aside, Killian, but it's very hard to avoid the general public's talk about Mayo for Sam, because I think no matter where you go and when you start talking about championship and when you turn on televisions and see Mayo jerseys at big events, it's the phrase on everyone's lips when the championship starts. And when it's a strange championship and people are saying anything could happen, then it is the phrase that's thrown around all the time.
Yeah, and it is, and sure, look, I enjoy hearing the narratives and the crack and all the fun of it as much as anyone. But I think that's very different to what goes on, you know, inside the four walls in McHale Park when we're training. I know, you can't help but, you know, be exposed to that kind of chat and the fun and the crack and the flagging with the neighbours over the borders and stuff. It's all part of it. And I enjoy that, but when it comes to, right, how do we get better, or how do I get onto the team here? How do I get better understanding of my wing forward, you just block that stuff out, and it goes, probably boring enough to say, but it just goes into that kind of mindset where it's, right, little small gains here this week, what can we focus on? And, you know, it's very separate to the external chatter.
Killian, would you use any part of it as fuel, the kind of the pain and the hurt that you've been through? Do you use it as fuel, or do you see it as a squad or yourself personally as a bit of a burden?
I think any disappointments, you know, we've had or even other teams have had over the years, you know, it always drives you on. You know, I'm sure there's counties who have won 3 or 4, and the one that they'll remember is the fifth one that they lost, you know. So that does always stay in the weekend. I think that drives you on, well, personally, when you're maybe training in November or December or January, or you're in the cold gym on your own rehabbing a quad or a hammer. That's maybe when you have to dig into the depths of the previous disappointments and that feeling you had. But when it comes to game day or championship week like we're in now, I prefer to focus on, you know, what we can go and achieve, the fun and the sense of satisfaction we can get this weekend if we nail our stuff, you know, and just the positive buzz that I can go and chase this weekend. That's what I would try and focus on this week now, as opposed to, you know, going through years in pain and giving up old games when we got to their point, and you know, I don't want to go there this week, but obviously it's used at other times.
How have you found playing in the empty stadiums, Killian?
Yeah, it's been strange. It's been different, obviously. I've noticed it particularly when you come out for a walk before the game and you're just getting your bearings and having a look around, and normally the chatter is building in the stadium and there's that buzz and anticipation, but when the ball has been thrown in, I don't notice it that much. Genuinely, you're kind of so busy running after a cornerback or chasing or trying to cut off keeper's options. I get caught up in that so much, I haven't really noticed it, but it will be weird, you know, when there's a big turnover or a big block or a big goal or point, and you know, you're expecting that wave of noise from the crowd that's not there. But look, it's the same for every team, and it's a championship that will go to the team that adapts the best. So that's the new normal, and we've got to go with it.
That's it, and we are all living it at the moment, and I have to say we're looking forward to championship beginning next weekend, and we wish you all the best, Killian O'Connor. He was speaking today as AIB launched its sixth season as sponsors of the GAA All-Ireland Football Championships.
Game on UFM with Green Fern. Snacks. New high-protein snacking range available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on. Racing.
Well, welcome back to Game On this Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday evening as it is now. But anyway, during the lockdown, Barry Geraghty found time to announce his retirement from his 24-year riding career. But he also found the time to finish his autobiography, True Colours, which hit the shelves this week at all good bookstores. And on the line to join us now is Barry Geraghty. Barry, how are you?
Very good, Robbie. How are you?
I'm good, Barry. Somewhere in your book, you had a quote that a horse feeds off your emotion. How are your emotions right now as you reflect on your career and discuss your life in through your book?
Yeah, well, so there's a mixture of everything. You know, I've gone through it all, reliving it all. The highs are easy, but the lows not so easy. And, you know, I had my fair share I had plenty of good days, but I had plenty of days where I struggled as well.
I think that's a line we all throw out there. We had our fair share, but it's just part and parcel of the game, isn't it?
It is, ups and downs, plenty of success, but injuries, I suppose, are the main thing. And from early on, I had a good few. I fractured vertebrae in my back twice within 12 months when I was 18 and 19, which were tough ones to take at the time. But the last 5 years of my career in particular, I got on a desperate bad runner look where I broke both arms and both legs. I broke 8 ribs one day and punctured my lung as well and cracked the shoulder blade. So I missed 18 months of my last 5 years, which was the second leg break being the worst, when I had an external frame fitted, thankfully to your advice, Ruby, to have it done. And I was 14 weeks in that, and that was the toughest I've had to deal with. Getting up in the morning and lifting your leg out of the bed and the blood rushing down to your foot, and all you want to do is just lay back down and put it back up, but you can't stay in bed for the day. So that was hard. And then when I got moving in the frame, you're advised to walk and put weight on it to improve the bone strength and the healing. And as I'd move and got more movement, the wires going through my ankles would tear. So you'd go to bed at night and it'd be in bits, and you'd wake up the following morning and the tears would have settled down, and you think, oh, this is good, I'm in good shape, and you get out of bed, but by lunchtime you're back in bits again. So that was the hardest I've had to deal with. I've probably broken most bones in my body at some stage, but the last one was definitely the worst.
Barry, that sounds absolutely horrific. Probably not to Ruby, because he's used to hearing stories like that. But why would you keep coming back all the time? Like, especially that one, when it is later on in your career.
I never thought otherwise for anything. That's all I've known since the age of 12 or 13. All I wanted to be was a jockey, and loved it and loved every bit of it. And even when I lay on the ground in Aintree, you know, I was obviously in a lot of pain, but it was creeping into my head, is this where it ends? And all I wanted was morphine just to put me in a better place, and it worked. And the following day, I get a phone call from a good friend to say that the rumour mill was going again and I'm being retired. Everyone has written me off, and I got a bulletin out through my blog on the At the Races site to say that I'll be back for Galway, which was 4 months. That was the target, but just to get out of date to kill the rumour. So that's all I knew, that's all I wanted, and it took me 6 months to get back. It didn't matter that I didn't make Galway, but I was coming back. There was never a thought in my mind for anything else.
I was reading your book and I was listening to you describing nurses or doctors in age, you try and take your boot off. Did no one ever tell you to take your own boot off when you break your leg? The first thing you do, just put your hand down, take the boot off,
rude, isn't it?
Get it off before it gets cold.
Yeah, mine just wasn't in good shape. When I looked at my leg about 2 inches above the ankle, it turned left. So even bending my knee wasn't an option. So the nurse had me on the stretcher bed, and I have a strap across just above my knee, and she goes to take my boot off, and we have a zip down the back of our boot for cases like this, and I told her to unzip it, and that was fine, but she went lifting my leg with my knee still strapped down, so she's just lifting the fracture. So I nearly lifted the roof out of the ambulance with a roar. But she got the boot off, and she opened the strap first, then got the boot off, and then gave me more morphine, which was great.
When you recall injuries like that one, or the one that you did just before it, do you feel it again, or you know, is it what's that moment like when you're thinking back to that?
Partially feel it, but I've had a great skill all the way through my life of just blocking things out. So it was even shown on the BBC ambulance programme, and I was laying on the ground with no reaction, no emotion, no anything, because I could block it out. And apart from when she went taking the boot off, I couldn't block that. But partially takes you back. You know it was a horrible moment, but I don't think your brain stores pain long term.
Barry, you yourself in Ruby Sport is like no other. You mentioned the injuries and then there's the lows from performance, but the criticism, and you mentioned that there are people writing you off. Did you find the book a good way to kind of maybe get your side of it all across?
I suppose so, yeah. It was brilliant going back through it, and it definitely, when I was reflecting on the injuries, it was definitely, I was happy I'd made the right decision to retire. But it is good to get out your side of the story, because everyone's quick to write you off. And I suppose I was fortunate in my case to finish with a week like I did in Cheltenham, which was probably, I suppose, quieter than any doubters I had.
I was reading your interview with Donald McRae, and you mentioned in it about going to see a psychotherapist. It's not something that we hear too often, that sports people will talk about things like that. So you went to Francis O'Toole. Why was that?
Well, Paula suggested it to me, and I didn't think I needed to go. And I said, right, well, sure, I will go if you think I do. And thinking I'd probably prove her wrong, but no, I felt the benefit of it straight away. You know, true work and drive and commitment, at times I was probably a bit distant. So by going to talk to Francis, you know, I learned how to connect to myself, but also to connect better to everyone around me. Awareness, keeping yourself in the moment. I mentioned in the book how I'd be emptying the dishwasher and I'd be firing knives, forks everywhere, because my mind is, I wouldn't be tortured by results in the past, I'd be thinking more forward, making small plans, thinking races, you know, analysing in my own mind what way I might see something go, visualising. And there is a time for that, but not so much when you're at home and, you know, when you have wife and kids. And it wasn't the whole time, but it was something that when I did it, I really, from the first session, I came out the door and I felt a weight off my shoulders. And, you know, you don't need to be torturing yourself about things 24/7. You know, there's a time and a place.
I sat beside you for most of your career, and I would never have thought you were someone that couldn't leave it behind. You struck me as someone that could switch on and switch off the whole time, but obviously you couldn't.
No, I would switch on and would switch off, but it wasn't as much of a negative looking back. It was more looking at things going forward, plotting and planning, and not just, you know, being relaxed in that moment. You know, just have a tendency to drift off and be thinking of the Tingle Creek next week and thinking about this and thinking about that. So it was always more of a positive thing, but I wasn't as present at times as I should be, really.
Barry, I find that really interesting, because we always hear a sports psychologist, but athletes and sports people, probably the sanest part of their well-being is their sport, the bit that they're able to manage. It's all the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But when the flag drops, away you go, and there's no problem. And as it, the big occasion wasn't getting to me, but it was more the hunger and the drive. And I think as I got older, I would have had a very, very laid-back approach, and still would have always had. Like, I floated into Cheltenham in a fairly good place, carefree. But it was more hunger than drive. But I think as you get older, you realise that, you know, these opportunities are getting thinner, and you want to make the most of them. And you probably take things more seriously than I would have done back in the early noughties when anything went.
When you're describing yourself as a child, you come across as being this real sensitive little boy who, you know, would get your feelings hurt quite easily. But when you look at you then through your racing career, you seem like such a hardened man who it doesn't relate to that picture of you as a child. Did you change, or were you masking it?
No, I would have changed. And that's where I became great at blocking things out. You know, I grew up a lot probably from the age of 11, 12, 13, and riding ponies and flying around the farm at home, jumping at speed, getting falls, getting up. You know, it gave me confidence, it gave me belief. Where I was young, I was timid. I'd only turned 4 in September when I started school. So I was always the smallest kid in the class and the youngest kid in the class. I was no good at football. So I wasn't growing in myself in any other sport, but when I got going riding ponies, that was my thing, and it grew from there. But you know, from a young age in racing, you know, I did two vertebrae within 12 months, as I said, and you have to deal with that, and you know, blocking things out was a great strength that I had. But in turn, by blocking that out, I'd also block out everything else around me a little bit. So you become a little bit numb. Well, I wouldn't say numb to things, but you come a bit tunneled. And it probably helped me more than anything on the big occasions, because I was delighted going into a big race. I wouldn't have a nerve in my body because I blocked out any noise. I could roll in and do what I knew was the right thing to do.
But Barry, you have to grow up quick as a jockey. There's no underage. There's no underage jockeys. There's no under 16, minor, under 20. You walk in at 16 and you ride against the adults, and you have to grow up fast. Did you find that an intimidating environment to walk into?
I wouldn't say intimidated. I rode a lot of pony racing and I had good success, and it gave me a good feel for what I needed to do, and gave me, like that as well, gave me good confidence. You know, your early, your first couple of months, you're a little bit intimidated just because you're the child in the room, if you like. But as soon as you get a feel for it and get a grasp for the pace, you know, the feel for the bigger tracks, then no, there's no intimidation and you're up for it. And, you know, probably my earliest big race success was on Cockney Lad when he beat Theatre World in the Liss Mullen Hurdle. Theatre World had been second in the champion hurdle in Cheltenham the previous season, and Cockney Lad had won the Irish champion hurdle in Leopardstown, and I was only 18, and it was the biggest stage by far I was ever on. And you know, I got it to a T. The instructions I got from Noel Mead were brilliant, and I carried them out to a T, and it worked. But like that, the big stage didn't faze me then, so I suppose I wasn't intimidated. But you do grow up quick. You grow up quick because you have to, because you're like a young fella on the pitch with the older lads around you. If you don't stand your ground, you're going to get rolled over.
You surely do, Barry. We're tight on time, but before you let you go, Moscow Flyer, Sprinter Sacre, Kicking King, Bob's Word, Punjabi Jet Ski. If you could ride one more horse in Cheltenham again, out of all of them, and you described them all in the book, which one would you ride?
Good question. I couldn't. I'd be very hard, like splitting your kids.
Yeah, well, I didn't ask you to pick between Schaefer or Lorraine now. I asked you to pick between a couple of horses.
I suppose I never rode a horse over a fence like Sprinter Sacre. He could leave the ground astride before anything else. He could give the fence 2 foot and he could land astride out further than anything else at the far side. He was probably the most exciting horse to sit on. I can't say he was better than Moscow, because Moscow went 4 years unbeaten. But if you wanted a trail over a fence, there was nothing that came close to Sprinter Sacre.
Well, he was the one you rode that I always would love to go on too. Anyway, you can buy True Colours in all good bookshops. That's it for tonight, folks. Donnacha and Maria back tomorrow. Thanks to Barry Geraghty. We gotta go.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm's on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.